the way Dalvin had teased him about there being only one thing he could want from a girl of the valleys. Talking about Sienna that way disrespected her, and made Thane think too much about things he couldn't even begin to change until graduation. "We take these matters more seriously on Jellucan than most people do," he said, truthfully enough. "Speculating is improper. This from the man who watched that hollow 5 times? Nash laughed out loud. "Besides, you're supposed to stop being Jellucani and start being a citizen of the Empire, remember? And speculating is fun. I need you to listen to me." Thane put down his tools and looked Nash squarely in the face. "This subject is permanently closed. There's nothing going on between me and Sienna. We're just good friends," Sienna said as she walked away from the martial arts room, every muscle aching. "Always have been, always will be. That's all there is to it." Jude nodded her approval, then winced. Probably her head was still hurting from the last time Kendi had slammed her into the mat. "Very wise of you. Given the prohibition on dating fellow cadets, neither you nor Thane would want to compromise your careers by violating such an important rule." Kendi, beaming, sweaty and triumphant, just laughed at them both. "I'd break the rules for a guy who looks that good." For a moment, Sienna felt a twinge of jealousy. That was not at all how she wanted to feel when it came to Thane, and yet it burned within her, an ember that refused to go dark. But Kendi was already moving on. "So, what are we going to do with our free day?" "Personally, I don't care," Sienna said. "As long as it involves eating real food." On Imperial ships, officers were encouraged to drink nutritive beverages instead of consuming food. It was more efficient in terms of both ship resources and officer time. And the medics insisted the nutritives were healthier, too. They didn't taste bad, but they definitely didn't taste good. The academy mess served the nutritives, and like most students, Sienna had dutifully started getting used to them. But as long as she could enjoy some real, true, delicious food without guilt, she intended to indulge. "I believe we will be able to find acceptable meals at virtually any potential destination," Jude said, then hesitated before making her suggestion. "Would anyone else be interested in visiting the Museum of Multispecies Sciences?" Kendi groaned, but Sienna shot her a look. Their third roommate was soft-spoken, patient, and accommodating. She deserved to get her way once in a while. "Maybe we could go to the museum first thing in the morning, but in the afternoon, I'd rather do something less..." "Completely boring," she thought, but said, "cerebral. We study so hard here already, you know? I'd like to try something like maybe sea diving." "Diving? Yes!" Immediately, Kendi became excited. As a native of the tropical world of Ilo, she'd begun swimming even before she could walk. "I can't believe it's been 6 months since I've been in the water. And no, Jude, swimming laps in the wave pool doesn't count." Jude didn't respond to that as they stepped into the lift. Already, she was deep in thought. Diving would be a fascinating challenge. Bespin is a gas giant, which means we have no oceans or lakes. Swimming pools are rare luxuries. Therefore, my experience in the water is limited. The chance to expand my skills and observe marine life would be extremely pleasant. As the lift settled onto their floor, Sienna had to shake her head and smile. "Everything's a science project to you, Jude. Science is the study of the entire material universe. Therefore, everything is science, whether you see it or not." Only the faintest smile on Jude's thin lips revealed that she was teasing them back. Sienna didn't mention what they might do that night. Inside, she hoped they'd be celebrating her finishing the term as number one in the class, but even saying that out loud sounded prideful. The only other possible candidate for number one was, of course, Thane. And if he won, she thought she could be happy for him. Maybe celebrate with him, toasting his success. She'd rather he toasted hers instead, but... "Sienna!" Kendi shot her a look as they walked toward their room. Your brain was in orbit for a second there. Sorry, I think my head's still scrambled from that time you flipped me. Sienna began untying the belt of her martial arts gear as the door swished open for them. Think you could show me how that's done? No way, Kendi said with a laugh. It's one of the only things I'm better at than you. Next morning came the inspection of the laser cannons. Sienna stood at attention before her cannon, which she'd assembled to perfection. She'd made a point of using the most ungainly salvage parts possible so the instructors would see that she could build one under even the most unfavorable conditions. Her gut told her Thane might not push as hard to make his own task more difficult. If she could gain an edge anywhere, this was it. Commander Harn walked along the rows of laser cannons, each one matched with a cadet at full attention. Although the repair bay was by its nature a place to work hard and get dirty, the gray rubberized floor and walls remained unstained by grease or scorch marks. Imperial discipline demanded perfect cleanliness, the erasure of every task as soon as it was done. Only Cadet Windrider's cannon displayed any smudges whatsoever, as usual. Harn nodded approval as Kendi's cannon powered up. He opened her control panel, then nodded in satisfaction at her choices of new parts. He didn't smile, though. Not then, or during the next several inspections, though he did murmur, "Innovative," when he looked over Ved's work. That made Ved smile so smugly that Sienna wanted to groan. She awaited her turn, started her engine, and watched as Harn checked the efficiency ratings and overall power. Although he did not speak, his eyes met hers as if he were assessing her anew, and well. She'd impressed him. Somehow, she managed to keep a straight face even when Kendi mouthed, "Way to go!" over the commander's shoulder. When Harn looked over Thane's cannon and reached for the starter, Sienna held her breath. But the laser cannon didn't power up. At all. The color drained from Thane's face. Sienna didn't feel so good herself. She wanted to beat him, but not to see him fail completely. How is that even possible? She thought, gripping her hands together more tightly behind her back. Thane's not an instinctive mechanic, but he works hard and he's thorough, and he would have checked his cannon dozens of times. This can't be happening. This is unlike you, Kyrell, said Harn as he made a notation on the tablet he carried in one hand. Let's see where you went wrong. Harn flipped open the control panel of Thane's laser cannon, then froze, his sharp features hardening into a look of displeasure, even anger. Whatever it was, Thane saw it too, and it made him swear out loud, right there, standing at attention, a commander right in front of him. A few people gasped. But Harn didn't reprimand Thane. Instead, with a gesture, Harn released everyone from attention. Cadets crowded close, blocking Sienna's view at first, but she pushed through until she could see inside the open panel of Thane's cannon and realized just why everyone had begun muttering and looking around suspiciously. The wires inside had been cut. Straight, clean. The marks made it clear that this wasn't bad wiring or an accident. Someone had done it on purpose. Sabotage. Academy competition could be cutthroat, but up until then, everyone had apparently played fair. A chill ran along Sienna's spine at the thought of it. How could anyone, much less an Imperial cadet, be so devoid of honor? She was nearly as offended at the thought as she was sorry for Thane.
We'll solve this quickly enough, Harn promised, his voice sharp and cold as an ice pick. Whoever thought to improve class rankings through such a stunt will have cause for regret.
He strode toward the main door panel, pressed his hand to it, and said,
How many cadets had access to this room, alone, between Cadet Kyrell's last visit and this inspection?
The flat monotone of a synthesized voice replied,
One.
And who was that? Harn barked.
LP-888.
Sienna had misheard the computer. She had to have. But then the computer continued, finishing its answer.
Cadet Sienna Ree.
I would never do such a thing. Cyana swore in Commandant Dean Lark's office as she stood at attention before his long obsidian desk. Not to anyone, but especially not to Thane.
And why not? He was your only competition for the top rank in the class, yes?
But he's my friend.
Friendship rarely endures ambition.
Cyana's stomach churned so violently she had to fight not to be sick on the floor. This nightmare had swallowed her whole. Not only had she seen Thane's shocked look of dismay, not only had the entire class glared at her as she was hastily marched out of the repair bay, but also, and worst of all, her honor was in tatters, and she didn't know whether she could salvage it. What happens if I'm thrown out of the academy? Her thoughts raced wildly while she maintained her rigid posture and best attempt at outward composure. I'll never become an Imperial officer. Maybe I could still get work as a pilot, but I couldn't return home to Jellucan, not ever. My parents couldn't even allow me in the house without the rest of the kindred shunning us. No, she couldn't put her mother and father through that. If she were expelled, Cyana would have to travel to some completely unknown planet and start over, completely alone. The doors of Dean Lark's office slid open, and the Commandant barked.
We're still dealing with this situation.
Sir, yes, sir.
Harn quickly stood at attention. But another cadet has stepped forward with critical information.
The mixture of terror and hope flooding through her made Cyana unable to speak, even when Jude walked through the door, a tablet in her hands. Once Commandant Dean Lark motioned impatiently for Jude to begin, she spoke as calmly and evenly as if she were reading a list of machine parts.
Sir, Cadet Jude Edovan of Bespin, TI-803 reporting in. A thorough review of the data reveals that at the time Cadet Rees supposedly entered the repair bay to tamper with Cadet Kyrell's ship, she was in fact with me and her other roommate, Cadet Ideally, in our bunk. I've pulled up data logs that show her leaving the martial arts arena, entering the lift, and coming into our room. And there is no correlating record of her departure.
Cyana felt almost faint with relief, but Dean Lark continued to frown.
Data logs can themselves be tampered with, Cadet Edovan.
Jude nodded.
It is my belief that someone not only sabotaged Cadet Kyrell's ship, but also the repair bay computer, in order to make it look as though Cadet Rhee was the one responsible. In short, sir, I believe she was framed.
Your beliefs are meaningless without evidence, Cadet Edovan, said the Commandant.
Cyana didn't dare hope that Jude and Kendi's testimony on its own could clear her. If so, wouldn't he have said so already?
Sir, I hesitate to name the person who seems to be responsible for this sabotage because, while the data is clear, it is not absolute proof.
Jude's fingers tightened around the tablet, as if she were afraid the information would be snatched from her. Why are you holding back? Cyana wanted to shout. Who did this to me? Commandant Dean Lark stood up, and he was tall enough to tower over even the willowy Jude.
Report your findings.
Jude gave Cyana an apologetic glance.
Sir, it appears that the person responsible for framing Cadet Rhee was Cadet Thane Kyrell himself.
No! Cyana refused to believe that. There had to be another answer. Jude must have misunderstood the data. But nobody was better at getting into the inner workings of computers than Jude. Thane was the only other competitor for the top slot, and mechanical repair was one of his main weaknesses. If he hadn't done well on the project and had feared he would fail, he could have cut the wires of his own machine to disguise his inability to repair it. By framing Cyana for the sabotage, he would not only avoid being marked down for failing the project, but also drag her down so far she'd never be number one in the class. This isn't as simple as class rank, though. This could get me expelled. Thane wouldn't do that to me, not ever. And yet, Jude stood there with the proof glowing on the data pad in her hands. Chapter 6.
What did the Commandant say? Nash asked Thane.
Just to come to the office.
Thane resealed his uniform jacket, making himself ready for the meeting.
Do you think he'll offer you another chance at the laser cannon?
Ved lay back on his bunk, hardly even pretending to be concerned about what happened to Thane's class rank. At the moment, Thane cared about his rank even less than Ved did.
I think he's going to tell me what really happened.
Nash raised an eyebrow.
You still think Sienna didn't screw with your engine, even though there's proof?
It's not like her, Thane said shortly as he walked toward the door. He wasn't 100% sure Sienna was innocent. The data had pointed to her, and Thane had to admit data within the Academy computers was difficult to falsify. However, he felt at least 95% sure. Not only did Thane trust her, he understood what kind of person she was and where she came from. Sure, plenty of Academy cadets would cheat to get ahead, but Sienna, a girl of the Jelukani Valleys? She would die before doing anything dishonorable. Surely she would never betray anyone, much less him. They meant too much to each other for that. Still, he felt that 5% uncertainty, and he'd never doubted Sienna before, even for a second. When Thane walked into Commandant Dean Lark's office, he was surprised to see Sienna standing there at full attention. At first, he was glad. Good, we can smooth this over and move on. And then he realized that she refused to meet his eyes. Was that out of discipline or guilt?
Cadet Kyrell? Cadet Ree? We have a conundrum on our hands.
The Commandant never rose from his chair as he studied them standing side by side, rigid and correct.
The first layer of data says that Cadet Ree is the only possible culprit for the tampering discovered today. However, the second layer of data suggests that Cadet Kyrell tampered with his laser cannon himself and framed Cadet Ree for the deed.
Thane had not known you could feel the blood drain from your face. It was like going numb from cold.
Sir, I absolutely did not. I would never.
Spare me your protestations, Cadet Kyrell.
By then, Dean Lark seemed more bored than anything else.
I have consulted with our specialists who inform me that either layer of data could be the falsified one. One of you attempted to sabotage the other and covered your tracks. Not well enough to hide completely, but enough that we can never be certain which of you is responsible and which is innocent. Therefore, we have no other recourse but to punish you both.
Good pilot though he was, Thane had occasionally crashed a flight simulator. As the screens had showed him the images of flames and a planetary surface rushing up to smash him to atoms, he'd wondered what it would feel like to crash and burn for real. Probably it was something like this. Commandant Dean Lark smiled thinly.
You have both failed the laser cannon assignment. Your course rankings will reflect this.
Their ranks were high enough that even a failure of that scale wouldn't take them down further than the second quartile. Still, it stung.
Normally, the Commandant continued, a violation of the Honor Code would call for disciplinary hearings and potential expulsions. As we cannot get any closer to the truth, however, this would prove useless. Although I have punished you both, I am not willing to expel two gifted pilots based on such murky information. You will both continue on as cadets. Rest assured, however, if any similar incident arises during your time at the Academy, for either or both of you, expulsion will be immediate and permanent. Do you understand?
Yes, sir,
Thane and Sienna said in unison. Her voice sounded as hollow as his. They walked out of Dean Lark's office suite in silence. From there, one of the top floors of the Academy building, the view through the green-tinted windows showed what seemed to be half of Coruscant. A few benches and chairs were located there for junior officers, students, and visitors, so that when they saw the city spread before them, they would recognize the Commandant's power. No one was visiting this evening, however. Thane and Sienna were alone. As if they had rehearsed in advance, they both walked to the windows before they turned to each other. When their eyes met, she exhaled in the deepest relief.
You didn't do it.
Neither did you. He ought to have known that all along.
They smiled at each other, faith restored, but the problem wasn't solved. Thane sagged back against one of the metal columns between the windows.
So who the hell did?
Sienna scowled. Somebody who wanted top marks on the project. Probably that snake, Ved Foslow.
I'm not as sure about that. Ved's good with mechanical stuff. He would have placed in the top echelon even without cheating, so why bother? Besides, he's a stickler for rules, even when they work against him. So who would frame us both and try to make us hate each other?
Her face looked stricken.
Sabotaging the cannon and the data wasn't just scheming to get ahead. Someone wanted to hurt us.
Who in their class had a grudge against them both? Nobody personally hated them, as far as Thane knew, which maybe wasn't far enough.
It has to be because we're both at the top of the class.
Sienna groaned.
You mean we were? This knocks us so far down.
Only for now. He realized he'd balled his hands into fists.
We have to figure out who really did this. Once we turn that person in, we'll get our rankings back and get the jerk thrown out.
Nobody who would do something like this deserves to be an Imperial officer, she said, lifting her chin.
You're right. We get to the truth, and then we make the guilty party pay.
Thane nodded. Outside, ships and hover bikes darted through the misty sunset of the city.
Okay, how do we begin?
Jude agreed to help them, though as they sat at one of the spare data stations later that night, she warned,
My earlier analysis wrongly implicated Thane. Therefore, my skills must be called into question.
Don't say that.
Sienna put one hand on her friend's shoulder. You found the wrong solution because someone set you up to find it. Now that you know you need to dig deeper, I bet you'll get the answer in no time, right, Thane?
She shot him a look and he nodded. As if he hadn't argued the exact same thing about Jude's abilities outside the Commandant's office when Sienna first suggested they try this. But she believed in her friend. If they were going to find the truth, Jude would be their best guide. Jude worked at her terminal for several minutes while no one spoke or hardly even moved. The only sound in the enormous data analysis room was the soft tappings of Jude's fingers on the controls. The only light came from the dozens of terminals vacant at that late hour, all of them glowing faintly blue. Sienna glanced over at Thane once to find him already looking at her. Once their eyes met, he turned his head abashed. For some reason, that made her cheeks grow hot. With determination, she focused her attention on figuring out who the most likely culprits could be. Anyone might have wanted to knock them lower in the rankings, but attempting to pit them against each other? That was someone aiming to inflict pain.
We outsmarted them, though.
Her heart swelled with pride, and other emotions harder to name as she glanced sideways at Thane again.
It takes more than that to break us apart.
Jude frowned, wrinkling her long, freckled nose.
The paths taken by the saboteur are quite circuitous. I traced the information about Thane, and it's as if they wanted to make it look like a higher official here at the Academy was responsible.
Sienna had to shake her head.
Lie after lie after lie. When I find out who did this, I'm going to ask them why they ever thought they'd be able to frame an instructor and get away with it.
Not an instructor, someone in the Office of Student Outcomes, Jude clarified.
So what? An instructor? An administration official? Whoever? It was still a stupid move.
But Thane straightened in his chair, realization dawning on his face.
Do you guys know what the Office of Student Outcomes does?
Sienna had never even heard of it.
Jude replied, They oversee student performance and suggest methods for instructors to use in order to provide maximum improvement.
Then she added with a shrug,
But I have no idea precisely how they accomplish that.
Apparently they do it by screwing with our minds. Thane pushed himself back from the data terminal, as angry as Sienna had ever seen him.
Someone needed to remain rational.
Thane, she said,
think about what you're saying. Why would anyone on the Academy staff want to set us up?
Because they don't want two cadets from a backwater world to beat all the military brats. because General Foslow or Admiral Jastin or someone like that told them to knock us down so their kid could be number one. Thane got to his feet, expression dark. Even though she understood why Thane would be on edge, Sienna felt annoyed. Why are you turning this into some big conspiracy theory? Jude, who had been sitting silently at her terminal, chimed in. It is a conspiracy of some sort. The only question is, who should be held responsible? Nobody would be stupid enough to set up an official at the Academy, Thane ranted. Nobody smart enough to set this up in the first place anyway. So that means the student outcomes people have to have done it. You can't be serious. Cold fear began to pool inside her. Thane was edging past understandable anger into dangerous territory. You did not question the methods of the Academy. Yeah, I'm serious. They took a bribe or something. How many credits do you think it costs to buy your kid the top rank in the class? However much it is, it's as much as the Academy thinks we're worth. You realize you're making a criminal allegation, don't you? Sienna retorted. He shot back. What, are you going to report me? Jude sat very still at her terminal, her eyes moving back and forth between them as they argued. Sienna knew they ought to tone it down, at least until they were alone, but she was too angry to do that. And so was Thane. I'm not going to report you, but you need to remember why we're here and who we serve. You think everything the Academy and the Empire do is perfect. And you think every authority figure is evil like your father. Thane's eyes went wide, and she knew she'd wounded him. He stepped toward her. Don't ever bring my father up to me again. It's none of your business, got that? He'd never told her anything in his life was none of her business. They knew everything about each other. They kept no secrets. Now Thane had put up a barrier where there had never been one before. A wall of stone, and Sienna felt like she'd just slammed into it at top speed. You realize we have to confront them about this, he continued. Because apparently he was so angry he'd lost his mind. You want us to accuse Academy officials of dishonesty? Yes! I want them to admit what they've done and take it back. That's our only chance at getting our ranks reinstated. They're not going to reinstate us after something like that. They'd expel us so fast we wouldn't even have time to pack our bags. You won't even try? You'd rather lie down in the dirt than admit your precious teachers could do something wrong? Sienna wanted to shake him. We would only make things worse, Thane. So you want me to just take it? Just accept that my whole first term here at the Academy was a waste? As if everything they'd learned, done, and seen was wasted just because of their stupid course rankings. Infuriated, she shot back. Yes, I do. You need to let go, learn to deal, and grow up. He stared at her, open-mouthed, with nothing but scorn in her eyes, then said, I never thought you were a coward. That stung. I never thought you were unfit for Imperial service. Now, though, I have to wonder. Spare me your analysis, okay? We're done here. With that, he turned to walk out. Sienna both wanted to be rid of him and didn't want to leave things like this. So she called, Don't you want to see what else Jude digs up? She's not going to dig up anything else. We have our answer. You're just too naive to believe it. Thane's voice dripped with contempt. It scoured her raw. She said nothing more as he stalked out. It felt as if a bomb had gone off. Sienna sensed this incident had only been the trigger, that some drastic change had been waiting to happen between them for a long time. But she'd never dreamed it would lead to a confrontation so ugly. A crevasse had opened in their friendship, and Thane stood on the other side. No longer could she believe he loved the Empire as she did. No longer could she trust in his understanding and support. Somehow, Sienna already knew things between them would never be the same. Well, Jude sounded awkward. So, I did keep looking, and it seems like the trail ends at student outcomes. That doesn't mean they're guilty. The office may only have been a convenient rerouting for the original sabotage of the data records. And of course, the rest of the repair bay info has been erased. I'm afraid my search ends here. Sienna nodded. The data terminals before her blurred, and she wiped away hot tears with the heel of her hand. Jude continued. We should focus our efforts on improving your class rank in the future, so you can make up for this loss. Suddenly she stood up, less prim than she'd ever been before, and hugged Sienna tightly. Then it was finally all right for Sienna to cry. Chapter 7. For the Academy cadets, the next 2.5 years seemed both to last forever and to rush by in a blur. As the exams grew more demanding, the flying more difficult, and the discipline more exacting, the bunks began to empty out. The lineups tightened formation again and again. The corridor seemed less and less crowded as more and more students flunked out or simply gave up. Both Thane Kyrell and Sienna Ree were too tough for that. They still both aimed for the top slot in the class every term, which meant they clashed with each other time and time again. In Core World's classical culture, who here can tell me which opera the composer Igern is best known for? Sienna's hand shot up, and when the professor nodded at her, she answered, Chalice and Altar. Very good, Cadet Ree. And can you tell me the themes for which this opera is famed? Uh-oh. She could only hum several melodies from Chalice and Altar, but she didn't enjoy opera music. That made it difficult for her to connect music to plot. After only a moment's pause, the professor turned away. Memorizing by rote, Cadet Ree? Unfortunate. Does anyone else know? The sound of Thane's voice from behind her pierced her like a knife between the shoulder blades. He said, The opera deals with the morality of self-sacrifice and the repression of desire. Excellent, Cadet Kyrell. It was like Sienna could feel Thane's smug smile burning through her back. She gritted her teeth and resolved to listen to opera every single night until the next culture exam. Kendi and Jude could just deal with it. In destroyer-level craft operations, All other efforts have failed, intoned the professor from the mock captain's chair of the Star Destroyer simulator. Our vessel has been boarded, battles rage on every level, and we cannot let our enemies take the ship. Therefore, we must self-destruct. Which of the three methods of self-destruct should we choose? Thane swiveled around in his console chair. We should set the automatic self-destruct using the codes given to the three top officers. The automatic gives us the longest time to detonation, which means more of our troops will be able to make it to escape pods. The professor steepled his hands in front of him. An interesting choice. Does anyone see any problems with Cadet Kyrell's scenario? Sienna lifted her head from her view screen. Yes, sir. If the ship has been so thoroughly infiltrated by the enemy, there is no guarantee that the three top officers will all be on the bridge or even alive. Also, the extra time to detonation will only give our enemies a greater chance to escape as well. Very good, Cadet Ree. What would you suggest instead? Not the core engine method, which would require us to have easy access to the engine room. Again, not guaranteed during intership combat. Instead, we should go for the captain's word method. The captain signals for all to abandon ship, seals herself on the bridge with a specific password or phrase known only to her, and remains within to fire weapons at enemy vessels and provide cover for escape pods. She then pilots the ship into the nearest planetary object, star, or singularity. Sienna lifted her chin in thinly concealed pride. That means the captain must die with her ship, the instructor said. Yes, sir, Sienna replied. But all the Imperial officers should be prepared to sacrifice their lives to do their duty. Excellent, Cadet Ree. The instructor smiled at her. That old creep never smiled at anybody. Your answer is the one I find ideal in a tactical sense, and a moral sense as well. Thane clenched his hands around the edges of the control panel to keep himself from making a gesture recognized on most worlds as extremely rude. Moral. What was moral about blowing yourself up when you could just as easily escape with your life and come back to fight another day? Thane fumed over that the rest of the afternoon, including in hand-to-hand combat, where his temper fueled his punches until he hit Ved too hard. That meant he not only got a demerit, but also had to promise Ved all his dessert credits for a week to make amends. Screwing up in hand-to-hand was his own fault, and Thane knew it. But he couldn't help feeling like it was yet another mess he'd gotten into because of Sienna. Maybe she still bought into the idea of the Empire as the perfect state, every single planet's population singing its praises nonstop. Thane had learned better. Although the official information channels spoke of building projects, successful trade negotiations, and endless economic prosperity, he knew that shine was mostly gloss. The Empire built new bases to solidify its control. Its trade negotiations always seemed to result in the Empire's getting everything it wanted on terms that couldn't possibly have benefited the planet in question. And as for the mood of the populace, even the official information channels had begun spitting venom about a small group of terrorists who plotted evil and called themselves rebels. Thane had nothing but contempt for terrorists, but he also understood that such dissident factions rarely came out of nowhere. They were a reaction to the Empire's increasing control. An overreaction, definitely, but proof that not everybody accepted the Emperor's rule. Despite his disenchantment, Thane had no plans to leave Imperial service. How else would he get to fly the greatest ships in the galaxy? Smaller employers could also be corrupt, and the work would be less certain. With the Imperial fleet, Thane was guaranteed decent pay, access to top-of-the-line ships, and regular promotions. Best of all, he'd never have to live on Jellucan again. So it was without envy that he saw Sienna Rhee assigned to command track. His own track, Elite Flight, suited him far better. He even welcomed the fact that he and Sienna shared fewer classes after they divided into tracks. Thane felt relieved that he didn't have to see her every day any longer. Sometimes, even looking at her hurt. No, it irritated him. Angered him. It didn't hurt. Or so he told himself. All Thane knew was that since their rift over the fake sabotage incident more than 2 years prior, he and Sienna had never been able to patch things up completely. The humiliation he'd felt when she brought up his father, that she would suggest anything he did came from his father, it still stung every time he saw Jude Edavon. Jude had always been extra nice to him since that day, which only made things worse. Sienna had stopped confiding in him, which felt cold and strange. He wondered if she'd become so fanatical about her imperial duty that she took his distrust of the Academy's methods as a personal insult. How stupid would that be? Nor could he forget that she'd refused to challenge their superior officers, leaving his class rank severely damaged. It wasn't as if he hated Sienna or anything, and he didn't think she hated him either. But neither of them cheered for the other in races any longer or offered congratulations after a tournament win. They didn't hang out during the scant free time Academy rigor allowed. But occasionally, at the least convenient moments, the enduring connection between them would make itself known. Ashes would become embers. One day, only a few months before graduation, Thane headed back to the uniform dispensary, a trip he'd made at least once each term. He'd finally stopped growing, which was a relief, because he topped out as the third tallest member of their class, only a hair beneath Nash. But his body was now adding muscle to bone, broadening his chest and shoulders, which meant new uniform jackets. He was only thinking how tight and uncomfortable his current jacket was when he turned the corner and saw Sienna standing farther down the corridor, still in her loose black shorts and gray tank from ENA class. Instead of her usual proud bearing, she leaned against the wall and held one hand to her face. Even without glimpsing her expression, Thane knew she was upset. In that instant, he suddenly remembered something he hadn't thought of in years. The day he'd met Sienna so long before. When the other boys had mocked her as she stood in the hangar in her plain brown dress, Thane had thought of her as an autumn leaf, fallen and fragile. He'd learned Sienna Rhee was anything but fragile. Yet he thought of the autumn leaf now. "Hey," he said, after a moment's hesitation. He stepped toward her. "Are you all right?" Sayana startled, straightening up as she tried to compose herself. She hadn't been weeping, but Thane could see the glimmer of unshed tears in her eyes.
"I'm fine," she said hoarsely. "Thanks."
"You checked on her. She's good. Duty done. Get out of here." Thane hesitated, on the verge of turning to go, but then he couldn't.
"You don't look fine."
She made a strange sound, half laugh, half sob.
"It's stupid."
"What?"
"I got a hollow from my parents. The Munyak died."
"The one you used to ride up to the fortress sometimes when we were little?" Thane had not spoken of the fortress in years. Sayana nodded.
"Yeah, him. He was pretty old, and I knew when I came here I'd probably never see him again, but still."
She rolled her eyes, mocking her own emotions.
"Ugh, stupid to get upset, huh?"
"It's not stupid. That Munyak was great." Thane had ridden him a couple of times, too. He remembered being a child and sitting on the beast's broad, furry back, his arms looped around Sayana's waist, both of them laughing in mingled delight and terror as the Munyak nimbly walked a narrow ridge alongside the mountain. She smiled. It had been a long time since Thane had seen her smile at him and mean it.
"He was, wasn't he?"
"Yeah." Their eyes met, and for a moment, it was as if the past couple of years had fallen away. But then Sayana's expression dimmed. Her posture became more rigid, and she said formally,
"Thank you for your concern. If you'll excuse me, I need to change for my amphibious battle tactics study group."
Thane held his hands in front of him, a pushback motion. "You're excused." She always did that. Went cold and shut him out again. He told himself he was used to it, that he'd long since stopped caring. Still, the entire way to the dispensary, Thane couldn't stop thinking of the fortress they'd created together and how he used to sit up there waiting for his one true friend. He always did that. Acted nice just long enough for Sayana to forget how he'd lashed out at her. She'd start confiding in him the way she used to, then catch herself as she remembered how thoroughly Thane had shut her out. As she sat in her study group, watching hollows of real amphibious invasions from history, Sayana brooded on that odd, fractured encounter with Thane. She wished she hadn't gone so cold, but it seemed like every time she tried to be herself with him, he turned away. What had she done that was so wrong? He was the one who had gone crazy after the stupid cannon project 2.5 years before, assuming there was some massive conspiracy at work. He was the one who would have dragged them in to an administrative hearing based on no evidence, which would have resulted in their immediate expulsion. And sometimes he seemed so offended when she beat him on tests or challenges that Sayana felt like he couldn't believe that someone so inferior had bested him. Did he still consider her nothing but a little valley waif? Maybe he'd always seen their friendship as an act of charity. All those practice flights, all those study sessions with CZ-1, maybe they hadn't shared those experiences as friends. Maybe instead they'd been gifts from the rich boy to the little girl he expected to worship him in return. That was too much, and Sayana knew it. She and Thane had truly been friends on some level, still were, but it was a level she could no longer reach. Her study group leader kept talking. Sayana sat there, hearing, but not listening, remembering the way she and Thane had sat in the fortress for hours, sharing their secrets and dreaming about the stars. A few weeks before graduation, the Commandant announced that a handful of top cadets would attend a reception and ball at the Imperial Palace. The thought of it took Sayana's breath away. Of course, there was little chance the Emperor himself would preside over the gathering. Yet, the Imperial Palace was one of the grandest and most elegant structures on the entire planet. Apparently, it had once been a temple of some kind. Hundreds of senior military officers would be there, not to mention many members of the Imperial Senate. Any cadets invited to a gathering such as that were being noted for more than just mere good grades. It was a sign of favor, an investment in those future officers. Their introductions to powerful people in the military and in politics could change the course of their careers. So when Sienna saw her own name on the list, she felt like cheering out loud. Only much later did she realize who else would be in attendance. Thane Kyrell and Ved Foslow, she said, flopping back on her bunk. Of all the guys in our class, those two had to be invited? Any logical analysis of class performance would suggest them as likely candidates. Jude never looked up from her computer console, her fingers dancing on the screen as she finished her latest long-form computer operations project. Their invitations, like ours, were all but inevitable. You're just rubbing it in, Kendi said from her bunk, good-naturedly. This close to graduation, with their future assignments all but guaranteed, a sense of calm had settled over the academy. With the ruthless competition at an end, people could not relax precisely, but stop worrying about the here and now and start looking avidly toward the future. Just tell me you're not going to wear your uniforms. Sienna hesitated. Well, dress uniforms are appropriate for all formal occasions. However, they are not required at non-military functions such as the ball, Jude said briskly. Undoubtedly, you wish to wear a dress uniform because you do not have adequate credits for appropriate civilian attire. Thank goodness her skin tone was dark enough that nobody could see her blush. Sienna tried to sound firm. The uniform's fine. Jude sighed as she finally looked up at Sienna. Your pride is usually a strong motivator, but there are times when it only gets in the way. Please allow me to purchase your attire for the event. I couldn't, Sienna protested, hackles rising. Her valley upbringing had taught her to be prouder of her rags than the second waivers were of their silks, even when she had thought the silks were pretty. More softly, Jude said, We're friends. You've helped me tremendously during our time here. My mother holds patents on numerous devices used in Bespin's cloud mining technology. As such, our personal wealth is more than adequate to our needs. Why shouldn't I get you a dress? My culture doesn't... Uncharacteristically, Jude interrupted. I have a culture, too. We value generosity and the graceful acceptance of gifts. Sienna searched for the words to object, but if it was part of Jude's culture... Well, Jude looked hopeful. I don't need to own a dress, but maybe you could help me rent one? So she found herself arriving at the grand ball in the only formal dress she'd ever worn. Surely vanity fueled the happiness bubbling within her, but she couldn't help it. The soft violet-blue fabric sparkled subtly, and both the short cape and long skirt flowed around her as if in an unseen breeze. Many of the women in attendance, and not a few of the men, wore finery much grander, such as thickly jeweled bracelets or headbands or outfits made of embroidered silk and velvet. Yet Sienna knew she looked as elegant as anyone else there. Instead of resorting to tight braids as usual, she'd freed her curls, softening them slightly with light, fragrant oil. Kendi had loaned her iridescent combs made of shells from Ilo to hold her hair back at the temples, and simple pearl earrings. Sienna looked right for the occasion, and yet she also felt like herself, not like an imposter, the way she would have in one of the grand, wide-skirted, elaborate dresses and robes she saw. "There you are," Jude said. Sienna turned to greet her, then stared. Since Jude hadn't said a word about her own dress, Sienna had assumed her friend's practicality would govern her choice of gown. Something gray or ivory, perhaps. Simply tailored, appropriate for all occasions. Instead, Jude stood there in tight-fitting orange fabric, at least apart from a few strategic cutouts that showed her flat belly and willowy back. Her military short hair had been gelled into spikes, and her gold earrings dangled all the way down her long neck to brush her shoulders in a way that was, frankly, sexy. As Sienna gaped, Jude frowned in what looked like genuine confusion. What is it?
You look great. Jude beamed. As do you, Sienna.
They flowed with the elegant crowd into an interior hall, surely one of the grandest public spaces within the entire Imperial Palace. The vast corridor stretched seemingly into infinity, with massive columns lining either side. Brilliant red banners hung from the ceiling, their hems weighted so that they would remain motionless, never fluttering in any slight breeze. Shiny, well-polished droids rolled along with trays of drinks and hors d'oeuvres. They swerved easily through the throng. The air itself had been perfumed, though the heavy scent made Sienna cough a little at first. Brilliant crystalline sculptures stood on pedestals, shifting shape fluidly from abstract forms into perfect imperial symbols. Lights had been trained on the sculptures so they would sparkle brightest at the exact moment of the transformation.
"This is astonishing," Jude said. "Think of all the trouble this must have taken."
"And the money," Sienna replied. What had been spent on this evening alone could have probably rebuilt an ore refinery on Jellucan.
But there she went, thinking like a provincial again. Each world had to rebuild itself. Yes, the Empire was there to help and to govern, but in the end, Jellucan and the worlds like it needed to become strong on their own. Sienna meant to say as much to Jude, but that was when she caught sight of Ved and Thane. Ved had taken advantage of the occasion to wear Coruscant fashion. A long cape, silky shirt wide cut at the chest, and so on. Yet Sienna thought it was impossible for anyone to look at Ved while Thane stood nearby. He wore his dress uniform, like at least another 200 men in attendance, yet the rest seemed to fade next to him. And even though she had spent the past 2 years watching Thane grow older and taller, only then did she see him as a man. Her reaction confused her, but not nearly as much as the moment when Thane recognized her and she realized the sight of her had hit him with equal power. The way his eyes seemed to drink her in.
"Look," Jude whispered, pulling Sienna aside at what was either the best or worst possible time. "It's the junior senator from Alderaan, Leia Organa, the princess."
Sienna stood on tiptoe, eager to see someone so famous. She got a single glimpse of the princess, who was wearing a slim white gown, her long hair intricately braided. Then the crowds closed around Senator Organa again, hiding her from their sight.
"Can you believe it?" Jude said as they joined the procession into the ballroom. "It makes sense that she'd be here."
Yet Sienna found it intimidating that a girl almost exactly her age could already hold a place in the Imperial Senate, could be so poised, sophisticated, important.
"I meant it's surprising that she came to any official function, given her speech in the Senate yesterday."
Sienna remembered then. Princess Leia had announced on her father's behalf impending mercy missions to planets the Organas claimed to be negatively affected by Imperial policies.
"That was ridiculous," she muttered. "Pure grandstanding. Missions like that can't be necessary. The Empire would help people on its own. That's what the Empire's for."
Jude nodded in agreement, but said,
"We should be generous. Even if the Organas are misguided, they're probably acting out of a spirit of kindness."
Maybe so, but Sienna couldn't resist shaking her head at the arrogance of anyone who thought she knew better than the whole Empire. Dancing with partners was one of those habits Sienna had thought of as second-waver decadence before she came to Coruscant. Oh, they danced in the valleys, but dances were for the entire group as part of certain key rituals. Yet, core world culture had taught her to think of the practice as civilized, even between couples, for no purpose other than pleasure. She was grateful for that now, even more grateful that the class had also taught her the steps of the most commonly performed formal dances. The glittering assembly in that huge, ornately tiled and mirrored hall did not intimidate her. She walked confidently across the floor to her position and awaited whichever partner the computers would assign to her first. Of course, it would have to be Thane.
He stood in front of her, amid the shifting and settling couples all around, not quite meeting her eyes.
"I guess they wanted the cadets to begin together," he said shortly.
"Guess so." Sayana turned her head, trying to look anywhere else, but what she glimpsed made her smile.
"Believe it or not, we're the lucky ones."
Next to them, Ved scowled up at Jude, who stood more than a head taller than him. Jude attempted to look dignified, but Sayana knew her well enough to tell that she was stifling a laugh. Thane must have seen what she'd seen, because she heard him laugh slightly.
"You have a point."
Then the orchestra played the opening measures. A Kalinata, Sayana thought, recognizing the dance. She knew the correct position to begin and even held her hands up, but that didn't prepare her for the moment when Thane's broad hand curved around her waist. Their eyes met, and the dance began. The 1,000 people in the hall all knew the correct steps. They moved in unison, brilliant spinning colors, ever-changing but always in set patterns, like the bits of glass in a kaleidoscope. Nobody set one toe out of place. Sayana imagined them as jewels gleaming in their settings, clasped tightly in metal that was all but invisible behind the shine. Thane said,
"I thought you considered dancing, what was it, licentious, risque, a prelude to sin?"
She had once, before Core World's culture had taught her to be less small-minded. Now it only annoyed Sayana that he would remind her of her provincial ways. "In your dreams." That made him laugh, but from contempt or surprise.
"You seem sure of yourself."
"I am." It had been banter, not quite an argument. But something shifted in that moment. Sayana had not realized until she spoke that she was, in effect, declaring her own beauty and attractiveness. That gave Thane an opening to be not merely irritating, but cruel. Instead, he said quietly, "You should be." Their eyes met again, and Sayana became newly, vividly aware of the warmth of Thane's hand clasping hers, the feel of his fingers braced against her back. They hadn't been this close to each other in a very long time. Every move in the Kalinata required him to lead, her to follow, which added another layer to the intimacy of the moment. The gaudy swirl of the dancers around them faded until it felt as if the two of them were alone. Sayana parted her lips to speak, though she still didn't know what to say. But then, with a flourish, the song ended. She and Thane stopped on the beat, but they remained standing there, hands clasped, for a few moments after everyone else had begun to applaud. Then it was time to switch partners, and Thane stepped away without another word. For the next hour, Sayana continued to play her role in the dance, to laugh and smile along with the rest of the crowd, but she couldn't have repeated anything anyone said to her. She couldn't have said which dances she performed, to which songs, or who her partners were. Her thoughts raced as she went over and over the rift between her and Thane, trying to somehow make sense of it. Finally, during a break in the dancing, Sayana hurried toward a server droid. She reached past the many glasses of wine to grab a tumbler of cool water. As she gulped it down, she heard, "There you are!" Sayana didn't turn to face Thane. She could tell he stood very close.
"Here I am."
"Listen, we should have talked about this a long time ago, and maybe this isn't the time or place." She wheeled around then. "Are you going to apologize?"
"Apologize?"
Thane's eyes could burn gas flame blue.
"For what? Standing up for myself?"
"For shutting me out.
You're the one who..."
Then someone stumbled between them. Ved Foslow, already sloppy drunk. He laughed out loud.
"You guys are so stupid."
"Excuse me?" Sayana wrinkled her nose as she stepped back. Ved stank of Corellian brandy, which wasn't even being served at this party. He must have hidden a flask within the pocket of his cape.
"Stupid, you, Thane, both of you, so stupid."
Ved shook his finger at them as if they were wayward children.
"You keep arguing about that laser cannon thing. Who cares about the laser cannon thing? And you both got it upside down anyway."
At first, the words didn't make sense. Then realization flooded over Sienna in an almost dizzying rush of shock and anger. It was you? That only widened Ved's grin.
No! Me? Why would it be me? You still don't get it, do you? Bumpkins from a rock on the edge of the galaxy? Ugh. Of course you don't know how the Academy and